It just isn't possible. It's best if you go in alone, and don't even think about causing trouble. You'd need more than a few guns for that. So what are you taking us to? But instead of answering, he yanked at something hidden in the slime-covered grime of the wall, hauling aside a sliding panel. It was almost above our heads, a rectangular hole 2 meters long. Wary of tricks, like Quirrenbach using the hole as an escape route, I went first. Then I helped Quirrenbach up, and then Chantrell. Zebra came last, casting a wary eye behind her. But no one had followed us, and the only eyes watching us depart belonged to the tunnel's rats. Inside, we crawled, crouching, along a low, square, steel-lined tunnel for what seemed like hundreds of meters, but which was probably only a few dozen. I had lost all sense of direction now, but part of my mind insisted that we had all along been approaching closer and closer to the edge of the chasm. It was possible that we were beyond the fringe of the mosquito net now. Above us, beyond only a few meters of bedrock, might have been poisonous atmosphere. But eventually, just when my back was beginning to ache with something that went beyond discomfort into real paralyzing pain, we emerged into a much larger chamber. It was dark at first, but Quirrenbach turned on a matrix of ancient lights stapled to the ceiling. Something ran from one end of the chamber to the other, emerging from one wall and vanishing into the other. It was a dull silver tube, 3 or 4 meters wide, like a pipeline. Jutting from it, on one side, at an oblique angle, was what looked like a branch of the same tube, exactly the same diameter, but terminating in a smooth metal-end cap. "You'll recognize this, of course," Quirrenbach said, indicating the longer part of the pipe. "Not exactly," I said. I had expected one of the others to say something, but no one seemed any wiser than me. "Well, you've seen it many times." Then he walked up to the pipe. "It's part of the city's atmospheric supply system. There are hundreds of pipes like this, reaching down into the chasm, down into the cracking station. Some carry air, some carry water, some carry superheated steam." He knuckled the pipe, and now I noticed that there was an oval panel in the part which jutted out, more or less the same size as the panel which he had found in the wall. "This one normally carries steam." "What's it carrying now?" "A few thousand atmospheres. Nothing to worry about." Quirrenbach placed his hands on the panel and slid it aside. It moved smoothly, revealing a curve of dark green glass, framed by clean silver metal inset with controls. They were marked with a very old style of writing, words which were almost, but not quite, Norte. "Americano." Quirrenbach tapped a few keys, and I heard a series of distant thumps. Moments later, the whole pipe thrummed, as if sounding a monstrously low note. "That's the steam flow being rerouted along another network, for inspection mode." He pressed a button and the thick green glass whisked aside, revealing a mass of bronze machinery, nearly filling the bore of the pipe. At either end it was all pistons and accordioned sections, festooned with pipes and metal whiskers, servo motors and black suction pads. It was difficult to tell whether it was ancient, something from the Americano period, or much more recent, cobbled together since the plague. Either way, it didn't look very reliable. But in the middle of the machine was a skeletal space equipped with 2 large padded seats and some rudimentary controls. It made a wheeler look like an exercise in spaciousness. "Start talking," I said. "It's an inspiration.